and she is always desperate to visit them. This doesn't mean she loves me any less. It means she is happy when I encourage that love. When they have Edie, they put her needs first. They make sure she's fed, bathed, and looked after. This doesn't take away my role. It doesn't make Edie question it or make her no longer want me as her mum. The role of a good step-parent is no different. They are caring for your children in your absence, and sometimes bad ex-partners still make amazing parents. If your baby has an amazing parent, then I believe they should be allowed to parent, always. Being a step-parent who doesn't have a good relationship with your partner's ex is hard. It's emotionally draining. And it's hard not to give up. It's so hard not to think, fuck this, and pack up and leave. Because when you're doing everything in your power to help raise those children properly, with love and routine, but you get knocked back constantly, it's hard to keep fighting, especially if it causes issues in your own relationship. It's hard and it's unfair, and at times it's a nightmare, but I'm a true believer in time healing. And maybe it won't heal to the point of ever being good, but it will heal to the point that children come of an age to see right from wrong. They will eventually make their own minds up, and they will see who are the ones caring for them, who thought of them, and they will see this whether it is their birth parent or step-parent. When you're in the thick of it and you feel like things will be this bad forever, they really won't, because children grow way too fast, and before you know it, everything becomes much better. Ultimately, these children are far happier when adults get along. Children hate confrontation. They hate being questioned about what dad said or who mum was with. They hate being in the middle of fights between grown-ups. I know this because I spent my childhood there, and I have personally watched this a lot. It damages children. It makes them feel things and take on a burden and responsibility at an age where they should feel nothing but loved, secure, and carefree. So as difficult as situations may be, as broken as your own heart may feel, and as much as you want revenge, don't ever use your children. Don't withhold them against a good parent, no matter how much of a shit they might have been as a partner. Because parent alienation is one of the cruelest things to endure, for both the parent and child. Even if you are with the father of your child, motherhood is lonely as hell at times. Whether you have loads of friends with babies of similar ages, or you have no one, it is still lonely. Mother and baby groups are daunting, and it always seems like mums go in groups. If you don't have a squad by your side, rocking up alone is scary. I'm desperate to start a toddler and baby group. Ideally, I would like to have another sprog to start this, hint hint Josh, but perhaps, in the meantime, I can borrow a few of the mums and dads that come along. I want people to be able to come alone without any fears, so they don't worry about what they're wearing or how they look, or whether they'll fit in. I want to walk out onto the pavement and meet the mums and dads who are convinced they're failing and are too worried to walk in alone. And I want groups like this to happen all over the country, run by kings and queens who totally get our insecurities and fears as mums and dads and carers. Upon the flyers or website there would be reassuring words, because sometimes they can do the opposite to what they intend. So whether it's a young single mum who's struggling or a multi-millionaire mum drowning in postnatal depression, they feel reassured enough to go. When they get there, they're not glared at or whispered about, they're not ignored or judged, they are welcomed, they are loved and they are supported. Because parenthood is as tough as hell, and it would mean our worlds would be a much happier place if we could all just support one another. Having a platform has made me aware of issues that are important to talk about. I am desperate to do more help with bullying. A few months ago, I posted a funny ramble on my page about Josh and me having a Saturday night out. Within a few hours, the post had gained over 20,000 likes, and lots of people were commenting with funny stories. However, what I also noticed, which surprised me, was the number of nasty comments on the post. Comments about how awful my dress was, how shit my makeup looked, how bad my hair was. When I looked closer, these comments were left by other women. Women who in their profile pictures were holding children. They were with children, all of them, and I just thought, how the hell are we ever going to teach our children how wrong bullying is when we do it? How are we ever going to stop children committing suicide when the women raising them, the women influencing their lives, are on public social media pages in front of thousands of women choosing to tear strips off another mum, another stranger, that they don't even know. It made me realise that bullying isn't confined to the school gates. It doesn't start and stop at a certain age. It doesn't just go on between children. This happens all over the world. It affects elderly people, single mums, working dads. It doesn't care what race you are, what religion, whether you're underweight or overweight. It is going on everywhere right now, affecting too many innocent people. Adults at times are so vicious. They give the children they are raising the most hideous examples of how to treat other people. And unfortunately, these kids then go into school and do just that. But sometimes, children who are raised surrounded by love, affection, peace and calm can also bully. Bullying isn't just done by the child who's been subjected to domestic abuse. It isn't just done by the child who was removed from her parents because they had neglected her. Bullying is done by any child, whether rich or poor, privately educated or not. And the key to solving it is to see that. Recently, I was contacted by a female GP. Her husband is a surgeon. They have a beautiful home, their children are privately educated, and they holiday abroad. They have horses in their garden and they drive brand new cars. She seemed like a really nice lady. She came to my page because she was heartbroken after she was called into school to be shown footage of her son, along with two others, bullying a younger boy on his bike. This boy was pulled off his bike. He was spat at, kicked and punched. They removed his helmet and took £2 out of his pocket and ran off. This footage was filmed by someone nearby. She was too scared to approach the boys, but after they left, she went out to comfort the victim. She took him back to his house where she was met by his mum. She explained the situation and was told that this boy, who had been savagely attacked, had just buried his own father. He was also autistic, so was often the target of bullies. This boy's mum got the footage from the witness and went into this prestigious private school after recognising the uniform. This resulted in three students being permanently excluded and a devastated mother emailing me asking me where she had gone wrong. Bullying is that real. It's in all of our children's lives, whether they're the victim or witness of bullying or the cause, and it needs more awareness. It needs to be stamped out and children need to know it's not okay. I pray that we get bullying ambassadors into all secondary schools. It's something I have campaigned for alongside anti-bullying professionals, and as soon as I can, I want to be out there, working in schools, watching children being trained to help others. I want nothing more than to see these changes taking place and the bullying in our schools disappearing. I guess all of this started from guilt, and parental guilt is such a bastard of a thing to feel. It first hit me after I returned to work when Betsy was a baby. Before I went back to work, her routine was quite good. She still woke through the night for a feed, which I was told she shouldn't be doing by the health visitor at the time. When I went back to work, I was out of the house all day due to the travel times on the bus. I missed Betsy so much. By the time I got home in the evening, she was beyond overtired, but was so excited to see me that she got herself in a total state within minutes of me walking through the door. So I started cuddling her to sleep. When she went off, I would lie her in her cot, hoping that she would stay asleep. I realised it was ridiculous, but by the time I decided to go back to putting her down awake in her cot, she was well and truly used to having me get her to sleep, and so it was hell. Absolute hell. She would kneel against her cot and wail. She would sob huge fat tears that left me feeling like I was the worst mum on the planet. One night I heard her stop crying, and I went in to be met with her having fallen asleep on all fours, her forehead against the cot bars, leaving a huge imprint on her head. I felt so guilty I cried. I bought books on controlled crying. I bought books on the best way to settle babies, routines, the lot. Nothing seemed to work. Nothing helped me. That feeling I had of my baby being inconsolable no matter what I did was an awful one. And it's a feeling as a parent that sticks with you. And what goes from feeling like you failed while you were falling asleep on their bedroom carpet at 3 o'clock in the morning holding their hand through the cot bars goes on to you feeling like shit because they've come out of primary school on their first day desperate for a poo, having held it in because they didn't know how to wipe their own bum. Then that goes on to the teenagers where you can't afford to buy your daughter the trainers every other kid has got, and you worry that they'll get bullied because they're not seen as cool enough. Parental guilt sits with you. Every time your child feels shit, you feel shit with them. Every time someone is cruel or nasty to them, it will feel like they have been cruel or nasty to you. Every time they hurt, you hurt. Only you hurt far worse because you're their protector, and it's a hideous thing to feel guilt when you just can't physically make everything okay. Some weeks, I get a few hundred messages on my page, but if I write a post that people can really relate to, I can receive up to 20,000 messages in one evening. I have thousands of unopened emails on the page right now because I don't physically have the time to sit and open them. Instead, I have an automated message with an email address for people to contact me in an emergency. The emails I plod through contain various things. Some people just send me a love heart emoji to thank me for the work that I do. Some want to rant about their lives. Others offer to buy my page for thousands of dollars. The main emails I receive, though, are from women being subjected to domestic abuse. Women and men who are aware that someone they know is being subjected to violence. Or women who have had their hearts broken because their partners have been unfaithful and left them, leaving them with no idea how to continue. It's a hard one for me, that question. Because when I do my usual crazy thought process of, what would I do if I ever found out Josh was unfaithful? Or what would I do if he left me for another woman? I genuinely don't know how I would survive. I've actually Googled, is it possible to die of a broken heart? Of course, I would survive. I would cope. I'd have to. But that thought is enough to make me feel a few seconds of what these women have felt. Most of them genuinely didn't see it come in. They were happy, they had a nice home, they had healthy children. They were in love. Then all of a sudden, they get the news that their partner is leaving them for another woman, or they find out they've been unfaithful, and they genuinely, physically, do not know how to continue to function or cope. I get it. Every bit of it. Recently, I posted on my page details of my friend who has an idyllic life with her husband. They're wealthy, they have healthy children, a beautiful home and nice cars. He's an amazing father and husband, yet he's just had an affair, a full-blown sexual affair that only stopped when his heavily pregnant wife caught him. Of course, he's sorry now that he's been found out. He doesn't know why it happened. Says that if he could take it all back that he would. Claims that the other woman means nothing to him and it was just sex. But you don't heal from that, do you? It isn't possible for your brain to accept the person you love has done that to you and you just need to forget it and move on. When I wrote about this, the post gained lots of attention. It got people talking in the comments and mainly I was left saddened because so many women spoke about being in this exact position. Some were years down the line and their hearts were still as broken as if it had only happened yesterday. What stuck with me, though, was a message I received from a beautiful lady who had an amazing career. She lost both her parents within a year of each other, and after becoming pregnant by her partner, who she told me was a really lovely guy and an amazing stepfather to her child, she embarked on an affair with a colleague. He was also married with children. She convinced herself it was true love and that they wanted to be together. Only when she was 38 weeks pregnant, her partner went through her mobile phone and found out what had been happening. He was left beyond devastated, as was her son who doted on his stepdad. She told me that instantly the thought of leaving him appalled her. The thought of raising her baby with the guy that she was having the affair with disgusted her, and she was left in turmoil at not having given a second thought to what would happen to her son or her baby that was now due. Now she lives with the consequences, away from her partner who left her, and with a newborn baby. She lives with the guilt of watching her son grieve for a stepdad and her baby not knowing his own father properly, a man who has been left utterly heartbroken at that betrayal and will most likely never, ever get over it. And there you have it, a whole family ripped apart and every single member of it left feeling like shit, apart from a newborn baby who has no idea how uncertain their future upbringing is. When I spoke to this lady, I saw that she is actually a really sweet person. Her job means that she cares for other people. She is a nice, decent, respected member of our society. Unfortunately, she has made some awful decisions, some dreadful mistakes. But she is still a mum, she is still a human being, and she still deserves to be loved. Women, though, right now, everywhere, email me to tell me that they have just been delivered the news that their partners are leaving them, or they have just found evidence that they are having an affair. These women are heartbroken. And unless you've had your heart broken, you won't understand that there is no pain like it. It feels like a physical pain, an ache that sits inside you and hits you at times you don't expect. It's like being punched in the stomach and winded and it suffocates you. I can't mend a broken heart. I can't make anything better. All I can say is that the saying is true, that with time it does get easier. But when you're in the midst of it, it seems so hard to see a way out. And sometimes a broken heart brings bad decisions because when you're in such a terrible place, it's hard to think straight. You may get into another relationship that, quite frankly, you're not ready for because your heart hasn't healed. The only way to get over a broken heart is to learn to love yourself again. It's such a hard thing to do. It's one of the biggest challenges you will ever face. And in my 36 years, 3 children from 2 failed relationships and a shitload of therapy, it's something that I've only just learned to do. So, where am I right now? The Facebook page continues to be as busy as ever. After spending 8 months convincing a warrior to leave her husband, last night she fled in the night. I woke up this morning to a picture of them in a safe place, 2 children sleeping, with her being safe but scared out of her mind. I work on getting the police involved, try to get a refuge or emergency accommodation, and do my best to get her to safety and reassure her that she'll be okay. The emergency email that would receive a few messages a day at the start is now full each morning from women desperate for my help. I spend my days contacting agencies all over the country trying to get urgent help for the most desperate, frightened warriors and their children. I'm also trying to continue the fight against bullying. Hopefully, in the near future, I will be working with charities and schools to help change young people's lives. And maybe we will have another baby. All of a sudden, since Edie started school in September 2017, I don't feel done. It's the first time in 13 years I haven't had a sidekick, and I'm lonely. People keep telling me I will get used to being by myself, having me time, and maybe they're right, but so far I hate it, and I miss being a mummy to a really tiny turd. So maybe just one more, a mini bird nerd slash part-time working mummy to complete our huge tiny army. Ultimately, I just want to continue as I am. I want to continue with this amazing huge network of people who go out of their way to change the lives of others. I want us to keep helping each other with support, love and advice, and I want to keep reading people's stories and comments on the page. I want to continue to laugh so much that it hurts. I have honestly, right now, never been happier, and perhaps that's because of the page. Because I've seen how other families have been ripped apart by illness or cruelty, and it's made me see how lucky I am. I want things to continue as they are now. I just want what I have to never end, but if it does, I have also seen that people survive. The page has given me a sense of hope which I never had before. I'm so grateful for all the support I've received. Although I'm the one writing the posts and covering the topics, you are the ones allowing me to do it. You have given me this huge platform. Your likes, comments, stories and shares have kept the page growing. It's meant we've made a huge difference to so many people, and it's something that I can never thank you all for enough. I think we all know that things can be tough, but in life there are also amazing times. Times that create memories which you will never forget and that make you feel happy. And I make light of the small stuff, the little things that make a day pass that other people will understand because they've been there too, and we can just giggle together. I'll never run out of stories because that's what life is, and I love that I have all of you to share them with. Last week, I received a call from the water suppliers advising me they were 99% sure we had a water leak due to our ridiculously high consumption. Josh went out in the road and surprisingly managed to find the meter to undertake a leak test. It turns out there wasn't a leak. Just a teenage daughter who likes to ruin my life by using half the salon-sized bottles of shampoo and conditioner every hair wash, spends 36 minutes shaving each leg while singing along like she's some platinum-selling record artist, giving no thought to the water bill or the fact that when she emerges from the bathroom it's basically a sauna. Josh called his usual family meeting round the kitchen table, warning all 6 of us that Christmas would be cancelled unless the water bill goes down. Edie was looking at him like he'd lost the plot. Betsy nearly vomited, muttered an abusive swear word, and stormed out when he threw out the sentence, "If it's yellow, let it mellow, and if it's brown, flush it down." Every night since, any time Edie hears the shower come on, she has a full-blown panic attack and repeatedly screams, "In and out! In and out! In and out!" Ideal. And that's our normal. And that's life, isn't it? I waltzed into Betsy's room one Monday with her clean uniform, and as I lifted her blind to wake her, she informed me she was on half term. I threatened her with death unless she got up. She went crazy. I checked the website and found out she was correct, and she had 2 weeks off, which sent both her siblings into meltdown because they were still at school and me round the bend, because she'd turned the house into a hotel and appeared to have forgotten to do everything, from picking up her dirty clothes off the bathroom floor to putting her Weetabix cement-encrusted bowl in the dishwasher. But it's all good, because she now has a year-long streak on Snapchat, which has uncovered the fact that every time I've banned her phone, her mates will have her passwords for her accounts. Brilliant. I felt so sorry for the dog having to live in this house with all of us that I bought him a new bed and a personalised toy box, and still he hates his life. When Edie and I attended Seb's Leavers Assembly, she met all of her new teachers and friends' mums. As everyone was talking to her, she decided to turn shy until a lovely lady asked her if she had any brothers or sisters, and she replied, "Yes, I have lots, and I have a dog called Winston who can lick his own willy." What a talent. And that is my life. Me, Josh, Winston, and the tiny turd, and the hundreds of thousands who have made part-time working mummy what it is. And I think that's it. I am writing this part tucked under a blanket while my babies sleep in the seats behind me and my husband drives us home from Scotland. Husband. That word is going to take some getting used to. Yesterday we got married at Gretna Green, just the seven of us. You see, as much as I have this platform where I gob off about anything and everything to thousands of people, the thought of walking down an aisle in front of people made me want to vomit. So instead, we decided to come to Scotland with our five babies and get married at the famous landmark. And it couldn't have been any more special. Josh and I married in the most beautiful suite at Smith's Hotel. Our minister was amazing and our children gave us away. We dragged in a couple of strangers as witnesses and we had a Scottish piper playing throughout the ceremony. Josh couldn't stop crying when the girls and I walked in, and when I took his hand, it was shaking like the first day I met him in his car. And after we got married, we had a meal together in a private dining suite where all the kids tattooed my legs and got off their faces on slush puppies. And then we all went and jumped in the hot tub listening to Edie reciting the Gruffalo. All the kids were sound asleep, and as Josh and I crawled into bed at 10 p.m, he gave me the leg squeeze and the forehead kiss and whispered, "I'd go through it all again." And right then I believed that sometimes you do get your happy ever after. And right now, as I'm sat in his car watching his hand on the steering wheel with his shiny wedding ring on, I feel like I've won the lottery. Although that feeling may not last, because we're currently driving to Stoke-on-Trent to have a family moon, where we have booked attractions like Waterworld. So no doubt after spending 45 minutes chasing Edie round the toddler pool playing sharks or being made to go down death slides with Betsy when I can't swim, I will no doubt forget that yesterday I married the man of my dreams because normal life has resumed. So now the page continues. We carry on as a huge army of people, and I will carry on writing posts that some people hate and some people love, filming Josh topless when he doesn't know it, horrifying my kids when I give advice to the world, and just looking out for those little bits in every day that make it all worthwhile. My final bit of advice is to Josh. I really just want him to read this and to know that I mean it and to know that I couldn't be part-time working mummy without him. Well, not this version. Dear Joshua, your hobby has become quite famous on this page. When you're now in public, women you don't know shout "bird boy" regularly. Between the months of March and July, your love of bird watching and nest finding takes over. Any free time you have, you spend on Dartmoor, leaving before 4 a.m. and returning at 6 p.m. on a massive high or a mega low, depending on how your day has gone. In the past year, you've travelled to Iceland, Fuerteventura and the Pyrenees trying to find the rarest of birds. And we fight. We fight because at times I don't get it. I don't get why you'd ever become so obsessed over a hobby, and we fight because you try and reassure me it doesn't come before me and the kids, but at times I can't help feel like it does. We fight because for 5 months of the year I'm doing this shit alone, and it's hard. I resent you because I don't understand it. At times I'm envious because I wish I had something I loved like you do. Tonight we travelled to Oxford, where you were invited to present a slideshow of the rare birds you've seen and the nests you found to the most knowledgeable bird watchers in our country. When you asked me to go along, I wanted to say no. These aren't my type of people, birds aren't my interest, and I felt like I just wouldn't have fitted in. But in the past 18 months, you've followed me all over the country to support this page. You've spoken to warriors in need of police advice, and you've sat with me through the night when I've needed to work. So I agreed. And tonight, I watched you give your presentation. I watched you talk about all the birds and nests you found in the countries you've been to. I watched you show pictures of what you've seen, and I listened to your passion and love for what you do. The same passion and love your mum and sister tell me that your dad had, that he instilled into you before he died when you were just 21 years old of the cruelest illness. And as I listened tonight, I still didn't get it. I'll never understand what makes you want to set your alarm for 3 a.m. to leave and go and find the nest of a tree pipit in the middle of nowhere. But what I do get is how amazing you are. For the summer months you disappear, but you make it up to our family in the winter by being the most amazing dad and partner. You don't go out drinking, gambling or cheating, and you treat our family with nothing but love and respect. So tonight, when I watched you be a bird nerd, you made me want to fight harder for what I believe in, because you took me on as a single mum when I had 3 babies by 2 dads, when I was at my very worst, and I want more women out there to have nothing to worry about other than their partners having an odd little hobby that they don't understand. I love you so much. I'm immensely proud of what you do and who you are, and you're hot as fuck. Rach. Kiss kiss. You have been listening to an Orion audiobook, Part-Time Working Mummy, A Patchwork Life, written and read by Rachel Hambleton. Produced by Jordan Killiard for Sound Gallery Studios with Strathmore Publishing. The text is copyright by Rachel Hambleton 2018. The recording is copyright 2018 by Orion Publishing Group Limited. For information about other Orion audiobooks, visit the website at orionbooks.co.uk.
Audible hopes you've enjoyed this program.